Welcome to the Nerdist Podcast number 678. This episode, I would like to promote our San Diego Comic-Con shows. That if you go to funcomfortabletour.com, there are ticket links there. But I'm doing a Fun Comfortable stand-up tour the Friday night of Comic-Con at 8 p.m. And then Saturday at 8 p.m. we're doing a live Nerdist Podcast. And the show, if we get close to sold out on that soon, then we'll add a second show. But the guest that we have for the first show is fucking rad. I don't know if we're allowed to announce it yet, but it's
people will want to be there.
Yeah. He's a knight. It's not Shug. Sorry to disappoint your bubble there.
Although if we do a second show.
I mean, I don't know. So that's how I go to funcomfortabletour.com. Kai, what do you got?
I just got a nice lady named Tracy Tomey, who does cool art prints that she sells on Etsy. Her Etsy page is And So It Goes, like from slaughterhouse5.etsy.com. But she does prints for like Doctor Who, Game of Thrones, Twin Peaks, and they're all pretty cool. I
enjoy all of those things.
You should get a fun print from a lady who has cool with dealing with copyright things than selling them. I am fascinated by that stuff on Etsy.
Okay, what do you got, Katie?
I want to highlight a recent episode of Bizarre States.
Oh, that, yes. Jessica and Andrew.
Andrew Bowser. They talk about all scary stuff. It scares me. It really does. But they had Justin Benson and Aaron Moorhead, who made movies like Resolution and VHS. Uh-huh. They were recently on to talk about their next film that is based on the famed oculist Aleister Crowley.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
That sounds rad.
And producer Aristotle said it was a great episode. He said it was very interesting and that everyone should listen to it.
Fantastic. Thank you, Katie Levine.
That sounds like too many words for Aristotle to say at one time.
He is very quiet.
Did he just nod? It was good.
You know, Katie was quiet when she first started working on the podcast, and now, you know, she's just
can't
as
stop.
Comfortable. Yeah, it's good. It's been fun to watch you open up.
Yeah.
Used to be very
she's
shy.
Now self-conscious, like, oh God, I have opened up. Shutting down.
Oh no. I've ruined the experiment by acknowledging the experiment. this episode is Timothy Simons, who is on Veep Sundays at 10:30 on HBO, and obviously on HBO Go, HBO Now. But Tim has been on Talking Dead. He's been on At Midnight. He's a great damn guy, Kyle.
He sure is.
I liked having him on the podcast.
Yeah.
I wish he was here now.
I kind of do, too.
Well, the listeners get to feel like he's here now.
Hi, I'm Tim Simon.
That's not how he sounds.
Oh, you mean because they're going to listen to the episode.
Yes.
I built this puppet for nothing.
Yeah, and you also stuffed it in a trash can because I could barely... You muffled your ventriloquist voice.
I was going to have him pop out Jack in the Box style. I've done a lot of terrifying things to this puppet.
See, this is why you just need to do things instead of explaining them to me. If you would let the Tim Simons puppet jump out of the trash can, then we would have had a good time.
I always forget show, not tell.
Yeah, that's right. Show, not tell. Show, not tell. Here's episode number 678 with Timothy Simons.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Like a little spa day for the two of us.
I mean, you've been on a lot of stuff. Where you and I have done a lot of different things together.
This is fun.
You did Talking Dead, and you've been on At Midnight once before?
Once before, and then we did something through Nerdist last year, that football thing, that fantasy football thing.
What did
Ben wrote?
Oh, okay.
It was some sort of like just one of the daily things.
That's great, Tim. It's almost like you're part of the family now. You're a part of the family.
Does that mean I get an office?
No.
No?
I don't even have an office, really.
How do you not have an office? Are you? Well, I mean, physically, are you? Would you even be able to sit in it?
No. Nerdist got this really great new studio space in Burbank. And it's like we have sound stages and we share office space. We have the lion's share of the space because we have the biggest staff, but we share the space with Felicia Day's Geek and Sundry channel and then Amy Poehler's Smart Girls channel because we're all owned by Legendary, and so we're all kind of like sister channels. And we just moved in a few months ago, and we're already running out of space. So I had said, like, I need an office. Like, it's my company. I need an office.
Yeah.
And in the planning of it, I realized that I was going to have to displace too many people for an office that I was never going to be in.
Yeah.
Because I'm in at midnight most of the week. And yeah. I'm at the Nerdist office once a week. And I most of the stuff I do remotely. So I felt bad taking an office from people who actually need it. But you know, you work in Washington. No, that's just a show.
What?
You don't work for...
No.
Oh.
Yeah, no, it's weird. That's just like they just turn on cameras and like it's a whole thing. They have scripts. It's like, it's a television show. You've seen television.
So you're periscoping your entire experience in Washington. Is that what's happening?
That's what it is. It happens live too. Like we have to just be ready. We have to be ready on
you
Sunday.
You guys are very funny live. I mean, it's so good. It's so good. That's a... Veep is one of... I mean, got it. I hope people give Julia Louis-Dreyfus as much credit as she deserves because she is on thing after thing after thing, and they're always great. And at a certain point, you just kind of got to go like, yeah, I think she's, you know, she knows what's what.
Yeah, I think at this point, I think I was talking to somebody about this the other day. I just think like that's just like legendary, it's just legendary status at this point. Like, and I think she would bristle if I ever said that in her company of like, stop it, like just shut up.
Yeah.
But like, she's not here right now.
Whatever you say, Your Highness.
Yeah,
I'm so sorry.
You are garbage. No, like I think that, I mean, it is like she's just done this at such a high level in so many different styles. And for such a long amount of time that I don't know, like I just like we're talking now about like the conversation of the three best comedic actresses of all time.
Yeah.
Right. I feel like that.
Going back to SNL, Seinfeld, old Christine, Veep, like she just has these epic runs on things where she's I don't know. You know, there you see people and you meet people who are. You go, oh, yeah, that person's funny, but you kind of feel like, oh, they learned how to be funny. But she is someone who's just like, she's just a comedic entity.
Yes. And she knows, like, it's one of the really fun things I like, and you'll see it sometimes. There's like a thinking face on the show that she pulls out that comes out in rehearsal because she does like, she does work super hard. Like, she is one of those people, like those rare people that like has a lot of talent, works hard and is smart, and you kind of hate them for it because most of the time you're like looking for two of those, like, man, if I could just be talented and smart but lazy, like I'd take it.
Yeah.
But she has, like, you know, we'll be in rehearsal and she will not fucking rest until she, like, it's not like a bad nothing's good enough, it's just like, what are we missing? Is there something else here? Like, she just won't stop working on something in the good way. Like, in the, like, oh, it's never just like, oh, yeah, that's fine, whatever. Like, let's just move on. She's like, is there something here? And she's really open to, like, we'll, like, since the first season. And I mean, I was essentially out of nowhere with nowhere close to, I mean, not even really like a television credit to my name. And she was completely open through the rehearsal process and on set of like, if I pitched bits to her and she'll be like, great, let's try it. You know, like she doesn't have to do that, but did that, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, when you start finding some of the most successful people and particularly performers, it's never an accident. And you hear a lot of those same stories like, well, they take wherever you're at and they try to go one step deeper. They go, what else can we do? Or what else can we try? And they take risks and they devote the time to it. And, you know, people who don't, like, well, I mean, you know, you could, it's not saying you couldn't have a hit show.
No.
But it's the difference between, you know, it's the difference between having like, like an According to Jim versus, and not that, you know, I'm not saying.
No, of course, yeah.
But, you know, it's not like that show really felt like, oh man, they're digging deep, you know, versus a show that you just know is like really special, a show that people really talk about.
Yeah. And I feel like that it just shows in the finished product how she leads from the front on that. I feel like it shows in the finished product how much of her stamp is on it.
And how have you grown in the past few seasons?
Oh God, that's a huge question.
It is a huge question. Cause you said you didn't really have much of a credit to your name.
No, like film and television wise, I didn't have, any, really. I think my only film credit coming to Los Angeles was I was in Stranger Than Fiction. And this is such an LA thing, but I feel like I may have recognized the writer of that movie by a tattoo on his wrist at a coffee shop the other day. But I didn't want to approach him with that.
Like, oh, you gotta.
I
was going to be like, the fuck away from me. What are you talking
about? Yeah, he may have been. But I was the guitar store salesman in Stranger Than Fiction, which shot in Chicago. And the part that I had, it got cut before it was shot. So I got to like hang out on set and like talk to Will Ferrell. But then by the time we got to like the actual dialogue that I had, there was no time left. So, but yeah, like I had been doing theater and stuff like that, but going into this show, like I didn't have like any sort of like television credit. Like I had never been on a television show before. But I think that here's one thing that I feel like I don't know if this is growth. Well, okay, my life is very different from the day that I got cast on than it was from the day that I got cast before. Not only because of like the show has been successful, but like my wife and I had kids.
Twins, right?
Yeah, we have twins. We have a boy and a girl, and they were born at the very end of filming of the first season. So like between those two things, between essentially my work life changing completely and my home life changing completely, there really isn't much that I can point to. Like even my day-to-day schedule is completely changed. Like when I'm not working, like I get up very early now.
Sure. You have two kids that are exactly the same age.
And like now we're doing a thing where they have like a little turtle that puts some stars up on the ceiling. I think it's called the Twilight Turtle. Oh. And they think it's pretty, but in the morning they want to play with the turtle. But so we have to play this whole thing where it's like, no, we put the turtle in the bed, that we put a little shirt over it. It's the blanket. They kiss the turtle goodnight in the morning. Anyway, that's a digression. But yeah, like one thing that I have, like it's been sort of great to realize this over the course of the last 4 years, no matter who it is, no matter who famous, no matter what they've done, they all think they're going to be found out as frauds.
And that always.
Is certainly true of me. Yes. I have been waiting this entire time to be found out as a fraud, and I'm sure it's coming. And maybe this is the moment. Maybe we're going to find out talking to one another that
Tim,
this is the
I'm
no, please don't.
From the
no.
Fraud Council.
Fuck me, no. No, God damn it.
Wait, what are you nervous about? I just came to say you're doing a great job.
Oh, good. Oh, God.
Well,
I thought you got
it. Maybe we should give it a second review. I'm a little
fuck.
Concerned.
No, just close that file. File.
All right. I don't know why I still carry these physical files around, but I yeah. guess it's just more intimidating as part of the Fraud Council.
But no, like that's been the thing. Like, Tony Hale and I kind of have a lot of those like philosophical discussions about like what it's like to like maybe be like have some measure of success sort of like later on. Like maybe the best time to get famous is like 18, where you're like well adjusted enough that you won't just like go into a cocaine spiral.
Oh, I think that's the worst.
Is that the worst?
Yes, you're fucking raging hormones and you know, I think there's a certain amount of beating down by life that you need to have to have enough humility. I don't mean that you should be crushed by life,
yeah.
But when you're 18, you know, you start toying with being a little cocky. Uh-huh. And if the rest of the world supports that, then you don't really learn how to be as human.
Yeah.
And so I think it's important to have that in check. I think it's much better to get that stuff later.
Yeah.
Because you've lived and you appreciate it. You know it doesn't mean everything. Mm-hmm. You know that it can go away. And I think you just have a much healthier relationship to it than, you know, when you're 18, if all of a sudden you're just super famous.
Just super famous. But I wonder, there is a part of me that wonders, like, maybe, like, you know, Tony and I would have these, like, these big, like, these things of, like, well, how do you deal with that? When we first sat down, I would ask him, like, we went to like a Whole Foods. Tony really likes chain stores and he's very open about that. He likes malls and
I'm
likes
so glad
chain
he's
stores.
Open about it.
Oh my God. Nothing makes him happier than a Cheesecake Factory. And so when we,
I know it's fun.
You should see him. Like he just like settled. He likes a sort of universal experience. I think that makes him comfortable. And so conversely, I hate any experience that is different, that is the same as one that I've had before. Mm-hmm. So So we were going to get some lunch like right after it was announced that sort of like we were cast. And he was like, do you want to go out for some lunch? And I couldn't believe that it was happening, that I might even have that opportunity because it was such a huge Arrested fan. And the only place that we could kind of like see eye to eye on was like the food court at the Pasadena Whole Foods. Like that was like the best we could do. So while we were there, I was like such a nerd. I was just such a nerd about it. I was like, so I think that guy recognized you. Like I saw somebody recognize Tony Hale. And we've had those conversations about like what it feels like to be recognized in public. And then like, then do you start looking to be recognized? And then like, at what point do you like kind of lean into it too much and start to expect it? And like, but I wonder if you get famous at 18, this is all to say. I wonder if you get famous at 18, essentially, like, you don't ever have to have a philosophical discussion about being famous. You're just like, whatever, I'm fucking famous now. Like, that's just the way it is.
Yeah.
And I wonder which one's better.
I just think when you're young and you don't really know much of any other way, because I think your identity from 0 to 14, mm-hmm. when you're 18, feels like, even though it's, you know, to you and I, like, 4 years, it feels like, oh, just that just happened.
Yeah.
When you're 18, it feels like forever ago. And yeah. I think your identity is a little bit splintered in that way. And so if you get super famous at 18, there's a very good, there's a better than average chance that you're going to lose it all at some point because it's yeah. very difficult to maintain
yeah.
that, you know.
Yeah.
And especially if you're...
The fraud council comes for you pretty council, quick if you get famous at 18.
The clipboards come out in full force and the IRL folders are colorful and collated. But
wait, did you just say IRL in real life in real life?
I did.
You did?
Yeah. I'm a cock.
For a second, I was trying to like, is there like, I was trying to figure out if that was like a, like a some sort of like technical term for a folder, like for one of those manila folders. Like,
well, it's just, I just felt like I needed to make the distinction between, you know, like a, between a digital file tree and the actual file.
Okay.
All right. So, but I'm sorry I used text for that. But I was just talking fast, so I don't know. I saved myself a millisecond. But I think when you're older and, you know, things are going very, let's say things are going very well for me right now. If it all went away, of course I'd be bummed because I like mm-hmm. what I do, but I've been there before. And so at least I have some frame of reference. Like I know I would survive.
Yeah.
I'd be okay.
Yeah.
You know, but when you don't know anything else, then I think it can be very, I mean, like then you start getting into questions of like, who am I?
Yeah.
How do I exist?
Yeah.
What are my core? But like, it really is an upheaval of your core belief system and your ego in the small e sense, like
yeah.
your sense of self. So I think it's a complete, and you don't know how to deal with the world as a grown up without that as part of your identity. It just sounds terrible to me.
Yeah. Honestly, like as much as it was as awful as it was at the time, like, I mean, like, I'm sure coming up, like, you dealt with this too, like, this idea of just, like, kind of like this, like, the soft bottom of, like, just broke. Like, not like,
mm-hmm.
like, when I was in Chicago, like, that thing of just, like, I'm fucking broke right
yeah.
now. Like, I have $2 to last me for the next 7 days.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's what we're like. There were times when I worked at a Starbucks on Michigan Avenue, and there was one morning I woke up, and I was living in Edgewater at the time, so like way north in Chicago, and I realized I didn't have enough money to get on the train to go to work.
Oh, no.
And I had to like, I mean, it's probably a 5-mile walk downtown, and I was just like, fuck it, I gotta walk. And then a couple weeks later, I was at a friend's house, and he was like, my neighbors were male prostitutes, and they got evicted, and they left this bike, and it didn't have pedals. It just had like the
crank part,
yeah. But like this, the metal sticks. Imagine just like two little metal sticks where the pedals had broken off around it. And he was like, do you want this bike? And it was way too small for me. Two of the gears worked. And like, that was then how I got to work.
They were male prostitutes.
They were male prostitutes.
So it didn't have a seat.
Yeah, it didn't.
Oh, come on, guys. What is the problem?
Come on.
What?
Come on.
What? We're just having fun. That doesn't. I mean.
I found this out that this was the game that they were running. It was go out to the bar, get somebody back to the front door, And then at that point, it was when they were like, oh, by the way, I do this for money. And at that point, the other person was just like, all right. Like, that's kind of a good, that's a good business plan.
It is a good business plan. Yeah, yeah. It's a little bit of a Venus flytrap.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I think they lost a lot of money in possessions, though. I mean, I ended up with the bike.
Yeah.
So I'm sure that bike cost some money when they bought it, and then I ended up with it. But like, that free bike, like, let me save the $1.75 on the train every single. And like, my God, like these mornings where. Like winter mornings going down like the lakeshore bike path with like a 20 mile an hour
headwind. Oh my
headwind.
God, in Chicago.
In Chicago, like these nightmare scenarios. And now if like, I'm not kidding, if my car seat is too hot, I'm like, fuck this. This is bullshit.
We get comfortable like, fast.
You get real comfortable real fast. And it is nice to have that basis of no matter what is going wrong on any set I've ever been on, I feel like I have maintained a pretty positive attitude because I'm like, oh, it's better than a 20 mile an hour headwind on a prostitute's bike. I suppose.
I mean, but you also know that you survived that.
Yeah.
So you know that if it, you know, and the truth of the matter is, especially now that you have children, yeah. You'll never, like, you will fight to make sure that yeah. you guys are okay no yeah. matter what you have to do. So you I think you have more survival skills than, you know, I mean, not that it would be a fun and, you know, wonderful situation if you're
right,
like,
right.
Well, not working and now I got to figure out what to do to, you know, to keep the kids alive, you know, but if you had to do that, you could access that.
Absolutely. To that point, I want to ask you a question.
Yes.
When I think we're sort of generally around the same age, when I think you may actually be very much younger than me.
No, I don't
wait,
know.
Wait, when were you born?
I'll just tell you on microphone.
Oh, okay.
71.
You were born in 71. Oh, okay. I was born in 78.
Okay.
So you and I kind of came up in this world in which selling out was the most disgusting thing you could ever do. And just sure. to that point about kids, I feel like there is now a culture that selling out, like, yeah, fucking sell out. Like, kids that are 13, when I was like, I would never fucking sell out. Like,
well, but the interesting thing is, like, the definition of, you know, I think people broaden the definition of sellout to just mean you got paid by a company to do something. And to me, selling out is to take money to violate your ideals. That's what selling out is
okay.
to me. So if you are, you know, if you're anti, if you're kind of a meat is murder person, but then you do a fast food chain commercial.
Right.
That's selling out.
Okay.
Because you believe that it's wrong, but you take money from your perceived evil to benefit from, to profit from that.
To profit from that.
That to me is selling out.
Do you think that people that are 15 to 22 feel that way?
Some of them do, but some others of them don't. I mean, just because, you know, because we live in this kind of technocracy, all that shit costs money. People need money. People see, you know, like when the fucking Kardashians are a role model and people are like, well,
yeah,
they're millionaires, you know, like, and they'll seemingly, I don't know them. Seems like they'll do pretty much anything for
it
money.
Seems
like
so,
when you kind of check all the boxes of like what they have done to get famous and for money, it's a lot of things where you're like, I don't know if I would do that, you know? And so I think that's a role model for people. And so they sort of feel like, yeah, get money, get famous, you know? So that idea, like as a culture, we've sort of sold out as a culture, you know?
Yeah.
So that's why I think it feels like, that's not there anymore because it's just the way people are now. But to me, the act of getting money to do something is just work.
It's just work.
And, you know, the idea of getting paid well means that you can make your family comfortable. You can provide for them. You can, especially with what we do, where you don't know when you're going to have to squirrel away for a rainy day and save for what could be a period of years where you're not working.
Yeah.
So you have to take those opportunities. But anything that violates your, you know, like what you believe is right in exchange for money, that's when it's like, that's when it's hook or bike.
Okay,
you know what I mean? Like that's when that happens.
The reason I bring this up is because that thing about kids, like that 13 and 14 year old part of me, that I almost feel like my definition was like, if you take money, for anything ever.
Yeah.
Like if you ever get paid to do the thing that you love to do, this is so dumb. As I'm saying it out loud, it's so dumb. But I'm now at that point, and I think that kids were a big part of that. Like, so, oh, I will fucking absolutely sell out. Are you offering me the chance, or are we just talking about it philosophically? Because if you're offering me the chance, I will take.
I guarantee you, you wouldn't sell out. In the sense that, especially because you have kids that you care about, mm-hmm. if you were, let's say you're anti-gun and some, you know, chain store that sells guns wanted to pay you $1 million.
Yeah.
On the one hand, you'd feel like, well, maybe I should have to do this because of my kids. But on the other hand, you would also probably feel like philosophically for your kids, like, well, I can't take this money because I don't want them to see their father buckle to do something that violates something he believes in. Yeah. So I think you would actually not sell out. I just think you would take a lot of money for something that you didn't have a moral issue with. There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
There's nothing. What you're talking about is like that punk, like that, punk
like,
rock.
Like that punk ideal. Yeah.
Although, you know, a lot of people's punk bands ended up making a lot of money. So yeah. I don't know. It's just sort of, you know. I want to hear what Kyle has to say about this because Kyle is a consummate punk music fan.
Is that like your thing?
Yeah.
Like, okay.
Culture and sort of stay to a lot of that. My feeling is I definitely feel that same way. Like, and I struggled with it at times where I'm like, when I started to get paid for things that I wanted to do, I'm like, this feels so wrong.
Yeah. What's a band that you loved that they started to get more famous? Did you feel betrayed?
I think yes, but I also think that it often is bands who sort of shift sounds to something that sounds, you know, it's so hard because it's an artistic expression, so you're allowed to evolve in whatever way you want to. But there's definitely that paradigm of the band who then starts sounding poppier, and you sort of feel like, oh, well, that's kind of a bummer. Like, you guys sort of shifted away, and then a bunch of people showed up because you created a more palatable sound.
Would you want them to have the same sound forever? Because that's also a trap.
Agreed.
Yeah.
I am a big fan of a band called Against Me, who were sort of the indie darlings for a long time and then signed with Sire Records back in like 2005-ish. And it was a huge thing. Like, people were slashing their tires at their shows, like out of protest for them making money off of things. And they still made good music. And it was one of those things where you really watched how crazy it could be for people to all of a sudden, instead of, to me, all of this comes down to like, the ideals you're doing to create an art. If you're just doing idealism for the sake of idealism, that seems like a redundant and sort of short-sighted way to approach something. And to me, like, the whole point is that you're doing a system to make art. Like, I found out last year that, like, Ian Mackay and Discord Records, I imagine you're familiar with, do you know he's worth, like, $25 million?
Oh, my gosh.
Holy shit, really?
Yeah, they Forbes did a whole article because he's kept, you know, he's run his own independent business that has had lots of successful bands off of it for years and years and years. Like, even in the book, Stephen Bush's American Hardcore, he talks about that, in a weird way, like, the hardcore movement in the 80s was kind of capitalism in leather jackets because it's all these kids starting labels and starting magazines and basically just starting their own businesses. And so to me, none of that is selling out. That's, to me, the better way to run a business. To me, the thing that's selling out is when you are letting people who are not part of what you're trying to make tell you the product that you should make to increase productivity for the idea of just trying to expand it, and, you know, into something. Because I feel like, and it's interesting because we've come back to a boutique culture where everything's so niche now, and that's basically what the indie scene in music and in art and
in books another interesting definition
has basically done forever. So it's amazing to me watching how much of the internet has brought that indie infrastructure to be the thing, because the other version is not sustainable. It's not a business. Watering down stuff doesn't sustain long term. It's fracking. It's showing up. It's taking like locust everything you can and then leaving no sustainability.
Well, I'm curious, culture. Tim. So in your mind, what do you think would be, you know, like what sort of selling out opportunity do you think you would be that you would have to struggle with?
You know, I feel like the coming out of theater school, I feel like now what you're talking about is this idea of like, and it started to kind of come into my head a couple years ago. I was talking to a guy when I was auditioning for a lot of commercials when I first got to LA. And I took this advice and sort of applied it to myself. He would never audition for a farm, even though he wasn't like a famous dude and he had a family. Like, he would never audition for pharmaceutical commercials because he was like, I know that I'm auditioning for companies and to shill products, but just to sleep at night, I don't want to have to shill for big pharma. That's like, I know that it's like, a grain of sand in a shitty world, but like that's the one that I'm not going to try to make money off of. And like, and so I feel like I ended up applying that to like Walmart, just specifically Walmart. I just stopped auditioning for Walmart commercials, and I feel like it's like the guns thing would be a huge one for me. Like if all of a sudden I was like, well, this is like one of the biggest gun sellers in the entire world, and I'm gonna, or if I specifically advertised for guns, like that would be a huge sellout for me. But theater school me was like, if you like whatever theater school cliche you want to put out there, that would be me. It would be like that thing of like, unless it's fucking meaningful, unless it's like, unless it just drives you to work 36 hours straight, like then you're not ever gonna do it, you know? And like sometimes it's just like, you know, some shit could just be fun. Yeah.
Well, that's the thing, is that you want, and also, you know, Kyle, to your definition, yeah, I mean, I guess if the idea is that a larger financial body is saying, you know, here are your parameters with which you can work, I guess I can see how someone go, well, that's selling out because you're getting paid and they're telling you what you get. But to me, I sort of, so maybe in that case, I'm a huge sellout.
Yeah.
But I also feel like, you know, sort of like with stand-up, it's, I don't feel like, you shut up and listen to what I say. I'm going to say whatever I want. And if you don't like, you go fuck yourself.
Yeah.
I'm just not that way as a person. Like everything I do, I feel like is a relationship, and relationship, you meet on common ground and there are compromises on both sides. You know, I mean, I don't think I do whatever a company says, like, you got to do this. I go, well, here's what I like doing. Here's what you like doing. Let's figure out if there's common ground. If there's not, we don't do it.
Right.
You know, and I think it's okay to form relationships and make compromises, because that's just a part of being in a community. And that's just a part of what it's like to function as a society.
And it seems strange that you might not, like, if somebody came into your office and was like, I know, I know you gave it up, but the office, I mean.
Yeah, I gave up the office. They wouldn't come in now.
If somebody came into your office and was like, you know, I really like what you're doing here, but it's just not going in the right direction, can we look at it like this? And you're like, fuck you, get out of here. It just seems like, well,
that's being an asshole.
That's just being an asshole. Like you're like, yeah. I have definitely in my life artistically been caught in that trap of like, I'm not going to listen to this because your point is not valid because I'm not the one that
right.
And it's like artistically been, it has had ill effects artistically.
Sure. And I don't begrudge anyone. I say, like, carve whatever path you want. If you want it to only be about exactly how you want things to be done and everyone else can go fuck themselves if they don't agree with you, that is completely fine.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot then be surprised.
Exactly.
Or you can't,
exactly.
You can't complain if you're like, well, I'm not, more people don't know, or I'm not further. Like, well, yeah, but that's, you know, because in order to do that, you have to form a relationship, and relationships are compromises. And if you don't want to do that, you don't have to, but then just be content with knowing that, you know, what you do is just going to be in this bubble.
Do you remember, I may be fucking butchering the story, but didn't Lenny Bruce do a thing? Like, Lenny Bruce had like some amazing stand-up stuff. And when he actually started getting involved in those, like in the legal matters, I feel like I read this somewhere that he would then just show up and do stand-up sets that were nothing but him reading the text.
There's a whole special that's just that.
Is it? Is there?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's kind of hard to watch because it's a guy who's just losing his mind.
Because he's losing his mind, and he is like it, that. And that seems to be in that thing of like, don't be surprised when people are like, oh, I really enjoy your point of view and what you do for work, but you're literally just reading like some fucking lawyer shit that I don't want to be anywhere close to. So the thing of like, I do whatever I fucking want. And it's like, okay, well, there's nobody
and
here.
And that's sort of, you know, that's kind of like art for art's sake, but also kind of a fuck you, which maybe is like, maybe that's what real art is.
I think there's a level of maturity that comes with it too, is that some people like compromise and all those things are important. And the more art you create, the more you learn that compromise is a thing, because you're not the only voice going.
Yeah.
And getting suggestions will make you better as an artist because it's how you grow.
Yeah.
And you watch people who won't do that and fold their hands up and are like, oh, I'm not changing my vision, are also people who are super bitter when like you get better than them because they you have progressed and they're not willing to see anything but their own single mindset.
And I do feel like you can, when people are like that, and this might be like one of those like meh, 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 things, but like I do feel like in a final product, you can feel that. You can, if that is a part of the process that got you there, you can see it. Like there's something sort of like dissonant about the final product or off-putting somewhere in it. And not all the time, but sometimes in that case of like, I'm going to fold my hands and we're just going to battle over this and we're going to get nowhere artistically. Even if it's a good product, have you guys ever seen that? Oh, yeah. Or do you guys ever
absolutely
feel that?
Yeah, okay. Absolutely. Because it, you know, especially if your point of view is so immovable and it, that if you're not connecting with people, then I feel like it's going to be difficult for people to connect with whatever the thing is you're making because you've made it in such a way. Now, a group of people might, and you know, if that's what you want, that's completely fine. Like there's no, I don't think there's any way to do it or you know, yeah. Some people really do believe. I mean, that's the thing about art is that it's so open interpretation, like what it even means. Like maybe some people is like, well, art is about subverting power. Mm-hmm. So if you're not subverting power, but the problem is if you get more popular, then you attain some power just innately. And so do you then, so it's almost kind of funny to see people then I feel like start subverting themselves because they feel like, well, now I'm the, even if they don't realize they're doing it because there's so much in the mindset of subverting power. And I feel like the punk mentality is almost the artistic equivalent of like an athletics career where it's like you get a short span.
See, I don't know if I agree with that though, because I think
well, hear me out, Kyle.
Okay.
Because you only get a handful of years to be rebellious. Do you know what I mean? And at a certain point, if you get comfortable, you know, it's like watching punk people get popular, famous. It just burns out faster because it's all built on subversion and rebellion. And at a certain point, you just don't rebel anymore.
Or like, and I mean, this might be, and I definitely want to hear your side of this.
Yeah, please,
but there, I want like it's that moment where like you think like you see like a punk kind of especially like all of a sudden you see like a 45-year-old punk like with a mohawk and with the you know the shit and the jeans and whatever, and it's like you never found anything better to do. Like you just never like nothing came up. How is that possible that nothing came up? But anyway, so to your
point. My thought process is I think the only problem with that is it's under the premise that like people are making things with the idea of trying to find the widest audience possible with what they're doing. So like you have a band like I'm just going to throw two examples out. Mm-hmm. Like a band like Social Distortion. Are you guys familiar with them?
Of course. Yeah, Mike Ness.
Great band, start off real punk and rebellious. Now they're basically dad rock. And there's nothing wrong with that, but it's definitely – and that's a guy who's still wearing eyeliner and dumb hats.
But this
is the band I have tattooed on my skin so I can make fun of
them. But if your artistic expression is essentially – like you're expressing your where you're at.
Yes.
Like it's basically – all your art is a snapshot of emotionally where you at or where you're at the time that you made it. So for Social D, like they just – like they got older as human beings,
yeah.
So their art's going to reflect that,
and it's going to reflect that on the and. But that is an artistic sort of choice, and it's not things dictating that's where it's going. Like Mike Ness is like, now I got kids and I coach baseball, I want to do that. On the flip side, I can think of comparatively, there's a band called Shushu, who I adore, and it's a 2-piece band who have made probably 20 records. They make a good living. They independently release all their stuff. It's sort of this collaborative group. They make maybe the most off-putting music I've ever heard. They're so great at what they do. And like, I pay to see them when they come through. I buy their records when they go. And it's not like they're trying to like, all right, this next one we're going to have like the geodesic drum machine, you know, hanging from the ceiling. Like they have found a business. You know, it's like selling Italian leather shoes. You're not going to sell as many, but you're making a product for people who want that thing. And you're never like, oh, I wish I could just turn these into Air Jordans.
No, I completely understand.
So I feel like it's our intent. A lot of people take that mindset of that, like, it's well, what happens if you get really big? It's like, well, maybe I just want to be able to have enough to support myself doing something.
Yeah. And again, that is completely fine. And
but I would argue that Shushu are punk as fuck. And like Social Distortion are also punk, but like one is holding to a different ideal than the other. But Shushu's also not trying to like rebel. They're just trying to like do something different.
Yeah. I think ultimately it comes down to are you happy with what you're doing?
Yeah. Yeah. That's to me what matters.
But I also know that there are people that feel that, you know, well, no, you should never be comfortable. You should never be happy. You always have to, you know, this comes from, art comes from the discordant relationship that you have to the world. And that's where, I think it's like everyone has their own idea.
Sometimes it's just like, stop, like those people, like, I feel like parts of that are okay. Like you have to keep a fire. You have to keep some level of discord that isn't self-destructive. Because when you meet like one of those people that is like, It just seems like, stop looking inside your own asshole. Like, you are just, like, you've, like, wrapped around the navel.
But that's
and you
my
are
art. It's the inside my own asshole
or to
exhibit.
To me, what's worse is the person, and every, especially in comedy, everybody knows the comedian who's judgy of whatever you're doing because it doesn't reflect their version of
what
comedy is. Especially in stand-up. Like, I know so many guys who are just cross-arm going, like, oh, look what you're doing over there with your thing. And it's
sure.
Like, fuck you.
And
like,
it's also the comics who...
And those people never succeed because they can't get out of their own way.
Well, it's also the ones who
when they do succeed, you hate them even fucking more.
They're just, and they're more miserable because them succeeding doesn't ruin your day the way your success ruins their day, so they can't enjoy it.
Well, you know it's the guy who gets on stage and he's really trying to push the audience, like he's really trying to be super edgy, and the audience isn't laughing, and he's like, oh, I guess you just can't handle edgy. It's like, you haven't said anything funny. Like, you're just. No. It's not that we don't get you.
No, trust me. Yeah. We get it.
Yeah. No, we get the picture. It's just not.
And basically, all we're getting is that you're really hard to be around. Here's one thing.
Now, maybe there's an audience for that, and that's fine. Yeah. And like you said, it's a niche culture. So, yeah. You know, like everyone has an audience for something, and the platforms are ubiquitous. So it's, you know, if you want to be that person, great. Make that thing. Just don't complain.
That's the exact thing. Yeah. Don't complain.
I was going to say, this is a little bit of a side shoot only because we talked about the Kardashians earlier. And I just watched that video of Amy Schumer doing a thing where she like tripped in front of Kanye, and she was on the red carpet at Time 100, like the Time Magazine 100 most influential people. She tripped in front of Kanye and Kim Kardashian on the red carpet intentionally, like, you know, to sort of like, it's still, and it's really funny. But there was that part of me that watched Kanye and Kim Kardashian sort of walk away. And Kim Kardashian smiled. Kanye didn't. He doesn't seem to be much of a smiler. But there was that part of me that in that first moment, did either of them think, oh, what shameless self-promotion? Like, would they be so
what
clueless? Like, what an attention hog. That was my first thought that must have flashed in their head. And I'm just hoping that when it did, they were like, oh, right. That's all I have.
Now, again, I don't know either of them. Maybe they do have that mechanism in their brain.
Yeah.
I would put money on the fact that they do not have that mechanism in their brain.
There's a level of awareness there.
I don't think there's a lot of, oh, right. Like, yeah. I just don't. It doesn't seem to me, based on the choices that I've seen them make, that is there. But but again, I don't know them.
So I don't know.
Maybe that's the case, but fucking love Amy Schumer for that.
So this is real fucked up. I actually have to duck out a little early today for a sellouty meeting that I'm going to.
Nice. Right
now. Fucking sellout. Right? Slash the tires, Tim. So,
I don't know which car is yours, so I'm just going to slash all those fucking tires on the way out.
Plan all along.
Oh, shit. He's riding a bike. He's riding your old prostitute bike.
I'll catch you guys later.
What's your sellouty meeting?
I am meeting with a film director about advice about a thing I am directing.
Well, that's not sellouty. What are you talking about?
Yeah, but the band might actually get the video seen.
Yeah.
I did struggle with this at some point. I'm like, I'm making this thing because it's going to get seen by people, unlike the other stuff I've worked on. Is that sellouty because it's going to find an audience? I'm making this thing so I can make another thing.
Like, if you direct something and it gets more than 10 views on YouTube, you just delete it. You delete it. Like, fuck
that.
No higher.
My record started selling and I didn't know how to process it last year. I was like, oh no, people are buying it. What do I do?
And then it gets deleted, and the next video is just Kyle smoking, to, like doing a vlog. Like,
guys, what
the
are you
fuck
doing?
Is wrong with you people? You're ruining the thing that I'm trying to not build.
There are people who I work with who were like, oh, he can't say that now. Kyle's going to want to make that video.
Well, I hope you have fun today with your punk/commercial struggles.
I'm terrified, so thank you, and this was lovely.
All right, Kyle, get out.
Guys. See you later, man. Have you ever, off of that, I brought this up in an interview the other day. It was sort of an offshoot. That idea of like, have you ever, I don't know if you've, maybe there are two things here. This is just me stuttering a bunch of times on a podcast. Do you possess that thing in your brain that like, I don't know if I should call people out by name, but like there are certain sportscasters that will do this. Oh, wait, fuck, I'll call this person out by name, like Rush Limbaugh. Like he does this, that idea of like, I'm just going to say an awful thing, not because I truly believe it in my heart, but it creates conflict and attention and brand recognition. Sometimes I wish I possessed that thing.
No, you don't want that thing.
I don't. I know I don't.
A, You know, that's an old radio trick.
Is that
like, that's like Tom Likas? You know, okay. Like that's those. There are people who, you know, there was a guy that used to come to UCLA when I was in college, and he would stand up in the main quad, and he would start saying really awful things. He would talk about, like, women don't belong in the workplace; they belong in the home. What are you doing here? And he would make racial comments and not like he wasn't dropping N-bombs, uh-huh. But he was, you know, he would say all of these things that, you know, particularly in college where people have discovered the height of their, like, you can't say that.
Yeah.
He said a lot of really awful things, and it would, these crowds would come around him and people would get really mad. And, the thing that I found out about this guy later is that he was, and maybe this is just what they call a retcon, where you're basically like retroactively writing a story to make that story make sense.
Okay.
But what I had heard was that he was a sociology professor, and it was his way of coming to get students to talk about important issues by taking the opposite side and force them to care about something so that they would have conversations with themselves. I don't know if his intentions were that altruistic, and I certainly don't recommend that as a tactic.
Yeah.
But,
that's dangerous for sure.
Yeah, it was. I'm surprised he didn't get the shit kicked out of him. But the evil side of it is this sort of radio tactic of, you know, saying something, you know, really, really horrible, just to engage people, because you know that stuff like that engages people more than friendly things.
Yeah.
I personally don't like that tactic because my desire for people to feel good and supportive is stronger. To feel good and supported is stronger than my desire to try to whip them into a frenzy so that I can get attention. Like,
yeah.
I don't. And if that means that I will be less successful, then so be it. But yeah. I'm not going to be the. I know exactly what you're talking about, and that's just not my tactic because I don't want to inspire people through negativity.
Yeah.
I don't want that to be the tool. I want them to be happy through positive means. And, you know, unfortunately, people respond hotter and quicker and more engaged to negative things. But that's just not my, yeah. But that is it. That is it. That's a trick.
That's an old trick. Yeah. Okay. I've seen it recently, and there is that part of me where it's like, and I don't know, maybe that's like, I don't want people that are listening to this, that maybe this is their first experience with me. I don't really want to go out there and say like negative, awful things, but there is that part, like at some, like there are like those bad days where you're like, where you're just like, in that way of like, you're still trying to move your whole thing. Like you want people that, you know, cause like we're in this business, hopefully so that people will understand, like want to see you perform in something.
Sure.
And like just trying to get, it sounds so lame, but just like get your name out there or whatever. And there's days it's like, God damn, man, like this is a hard fucking business. And if it was made easier by just like going out and saying some dumb thing and then you're more famous and like there's no repercussions, where it doesn't seem to be that there are.
Well, there are.
Sometimes
there,
like there selfishly.
Just, there are. They're just a little more long term. Like the more of a douchebag you are, the less and less ultimately people want to work with you.
Yeah.
And even if there's a brief period where it's like that person's got some heat.
Yeah.
The second that cools off, there people will not want nothing to do with you. And then what happens is these people are in a. I mean, shock value is basically it's like. You know, it's a natural resource. It's there's a finite amount of them, and it's like logging. Sooner or later, you're going to run out of trees.
Yeah.
And so what people have to do when they use shock as their primary mechanism is that the next time they have to do something more shocking, and then the next time they have to do something more shocking, and then there is a ceiling to what is acceptable.
Yeah.
Before you are just in prison.
Yeah.
So I mean, you know, and then it is, and if you and if you don't up the game each time, then people are just like, I get it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. You're misbehaving. Great. And I think that's one of the reasons why. I mean, I know, you know, Kanye was number one on that list, the Time Magazine list, but people are already starting to. You know, people are well into like, I get it. You know, like I get it.
He was, Matt Walsh and I spoke on a panel in the Cannes Lion, like the, in, like the advertising awards mm-hmm. in Cannes, France last summer. And I think, like, and so we were on a panel with James Carville talking about politics and sort of like, it was supposed to be this thing of like, sort of that the crossover between our show and real politics is sort of, is way too close for comfort, that sort of idea. And it turns out that Kanye, I think, was on a panel earlier in the week. And the first thing he did, as the story goes, is get out there and be like, I'm not going to spend this entire panel telling you what a genius I am. And he spent the entire panel telling them why he's a genius.
Yeah.
And I say that, but like, honestly, like, the dude's good at what he does, you know? And when he gets mad at a paparazzi, I'm like, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, but it's just that it's when you say a lot of those things before anyone asks you, yeah. You're too aware of it. Do you know what yeah. I mean? Like, it's too concocted. It's too, you can't be that far out in front of yourself.
Yeah.
And I think that's sort of that's where it's like, oh yeah, I mean, he knows what he's doing, and it's a formula. And I just think with each attention getting stunt, it's because, you know, like the last Beyonce thing, I mean, he didn't do you think Beyonce and Jay-Z honestly felt great about him doing that?
Yeah.
You know, like, would you want someone with your wife being nope. like, I don't know. I think you would sort of feel like, I mean, I think we have our relationship well under control, and yeah. No one needs you to white knight us.
Yeah,
like
you
that.
Like, you don't need to get up there
yeah,
on our behalf.
We're capable
like,
adults.
We're Beyonce and Jay-Z. Yeah, like, things are going just fine.
We know how to handle our own affairs. Who the fuck are you to, you know? And so then from that point of view, you go, oh, well, it's because he wants attention for himself. Because if he didn't, you know, it's like whenever, you know, with him and, you know, someone said, well, he turns down, you know, like, he gets nominated for stuff and, you know, if he wins, like, he would be happy to give his award to someone else. Like, it doesn't matter. He's already gotten the attention.
Yeah.
If it was really about not taking the spotlight on himself, he would have bowed out of the nomination and gotten zero attention.
Yeah.
But it's so clear that the pathology is that he needs that much attention. And I think at a certain point, when people kind of recognize that's the mechanism, I mean, as performers, we all want a degree of attention because that's how we keep performing. But when that seems to be the most important thing, then it just feels empty. And it just sort of feels like you don't even care about the art of what you're doing. You just want people to praise you. And that's a lame pursuit.
To that end, I do appreciate you guys cutting out the part at the beginning of the podcast where I just stated I'm a genius.
Yeah.
And I'm really looking forward to this podcast because I will do it incredibly well.
We didn't
want
to cut it out, but Katie hadn't started recording
yet.
Oh,
thank
you. So
we
missed.
Oh, thank God.
Yeah, we really
that would have come back to bite me.
Yeah, yeah. I think that the Fraud Council would have been
the IRL Fraud Council.
I mean, I really do think it'd be funny if there was, you know, a group that dressed in like lab coats, like black lab coat, not like made from a black lab, like a black, not don't murder a dog. I mean, just like black laboratory coats that would go around and just.
And like your fame has exceeded your talent, and we would like for you to take a step away.
I would fucking love that. Like, even just as an art experiment.
That would be fucking amazing.
You know, I say that now, but then someone would fucking do it to me, and I'd be like, God damn it, it bit me in the ass.
First call, first day is Chris Hardwick.
Yeah.
No, shut down the Fraud Council.
I'm sorry, the Fraud Council is much bigger than you now. Your weird little art project has now gained consciousness.
We're now federally funded.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, but again, you know, who knows? I mean, I don't know what happens to the human brain when it achieves that much fame and that much success. I mean, I don't know.
There has to be something, like, even when it comes to, like, that idea of, like, cell phones, like, when you get, like, social media stuff, and, like, maybe this is just so ingrained and it's not true, but that idea that, like, if somebody likes your photo on Instagram, like, you actually get a hit of dopamine,
sure.
Like, that idea. At some point, does your, like, when you get that famous and you have received that much attention, does your actual brain chemistry change?
I would bet that it has to.
It has to. It has to.
Because we're an adaptive species. Mm-hmm. So it would have to settle at a new benchmark.
Yeah.
For what is an acceptable level. I mean, you know, and listen, I am way not above that stuff. Like, if I post something on Instagram and people like it, I'm like, yay.
Oh my God.
You know, and you know that when you, like, for instance, when I first started Nerdist as a blog, you know, we would get it was just me for the first, you know, year and a half. But it would, when I'd post something, you know, it would get 30 to 75 visitors a day. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, that's neat. And then a website called Lifehacker linked to one of my articles. And in one day I got a spike and 1,100 people came. And I'm like, oh, this is amazing. Now, if 1,100 people came to the site and that was it, we wouldn't be in business.
Right.
Like, we wouldn't be able to sustain. So the benchmarks definitely change. And I absolutely, there's no way that that doesn't
it's
happen.
It's got to. Like, you just, like, you wake up, your eyes pop open in the morning from rest, and you are just used to it. Your brain is just operating differently than it was 15 years before.
But, you know, the fame drug, I mean, it's, I'm sure it's addictive. I'm sure it's completely addictive.
And then that goes all the way back to, like, the first thing we were talking about, like, Julia, somehow, like, all that stuff that we're saying, like, does not apply, like, in the bad ways. Like, in the bad ways. Like, the, like, that idea of, like, just her, like, still working hard. She does not have to work hard, but she fucking works incredibly hard.
And I think that ultimately comes down to when, and maybe this is what art is, when you give a fuck about what you're doing, mm-hmm. and you work hard on it, and it's important to you, and... You know, not that you don't take anything else into consideration. I mean, obviously, she must know that for her to continue doing what she's doing, that like there has to be a certain amount of attention around it so she can continue to make shows. But instead of, I think it's what you're motivated by. If you are chasing fame and attention, that is an empty pursuit. If it is a byproduct of the fact that you are chasing the how deep you will dig to make a quality of work that mm-hmm. is. You know, of a high caliber to you that you're proud of, those are different. I mean, the result might be the ultimate result outwardly might be the same, but the internal result, I think, is much different. Like, she, you know, if you're always pursuing quality work, that is much more in your control than whether or not throngs of people are going to tell you you're a genius.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you should not chase that.
We fucking solved art on this thing today. I love that. We really fucking solved art.
I'm sure the comment threads will disagree and tell us nine ways.
There is that Twitter feed. I think it was just called Don't Read the Comment Section.
Yeah.
And I remember somebody like, I think, I don't know why I remember this specifically, but I think Matt Jones retweeted it and I saw this. And it just said, nobody that you have ever admired or respected would read the comment section. And I really took that to heart. So if the comment section on this says that we didn't solve art, I will never know.
It'll be on my site, so I have to kind of
patrol. You have to get in there. You have to patrol.
I do kind of patrol.
That sucks.
So how has, you know, in the sort of few minutes we have left, how has that felt for you to go from... You know, not having a lot of people know who you are to having a lot of people know who you are, and then all of a sudden being a part of a conversation. Like, you know, Talking Dead has a lot of people on that show.
Yeah.
A lot of people watch Veep. A lot of people, like, you're popping up on a lot of things in front of a lot of eyes.
You know, one thing that has changed is, like, that sort of, like, fun, like, coming up, like, I grew up working in a video store, like, that sort of thing. And I was, like, definitely one of those people that was, like, an armchair quarterback about films and an armchair quarterback about music. And I think film and television specifically, I'm much less apt to be like, oh, this movie sucked because of this and they fucked this up or whatever, like, that I kind of did, or like, oh, this was garbage. And I think because number one, like, any film that ever gets made, it's a fucking miracle. It's a miracle.
Like, whatever, really is.
You're making fun of Paul Blart. That movie was a fucking miracle.
Right.
Because somebody gave it money. They hired actors. They got an entire crew of 200 or 300 people to all show up in one place and do that sort of chaos. And create that.
Like, and it still made miracle. $25 million in opening weekend with 0% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yes. And so, yeah, like, and I feel like one of the things that's changed to, like, sort of related to that was, like on Twitter or whatever, I might have said in the past, or on Facebook, I might have said, like, oh, this this show sucked, or I hate this actor, or this person's garbage, or whatever. Like, and since being somewhat on the other side of it and seeing people just like when I was on Talking Dead, like there would like that's a show with a lot of eyeballs and a lot of like really hardcore fans. There were like some people that was that were just like, this guy fucking sucks, you know, like, and in that realm of wanting to create from the positive side and not from the negative, I'm like, I don't want to put that out anymore. Like, I just don't want to be the person that puts that shit out.
Yeah.
You know, like, I definitely throw some negative things out there when it's like, you know, maybe, and usually more political, I'll throw negative stuff out there, but I try not to. But yeah, like, that's been like one major thing is like that idea of like really being clear about what I'm putting out in the world. And like, sometimes I'll read, like, somebody will just, like, at me and be like, you fucking look like a melted Ashton Kutcher, was something I got the other day. And I was like, and I'm just in my kitchen and I had dropped my kids off at daycare. And then I was, like, making breakfast. Like, fuck me. I look like a melted Ashton Kutcher. Like, I mean, like, it doesn't actually affect it, but, like, you just have to ignore that, right? Like, so, like, there was that human moment of me being like, God damn, yeah. I mean, I know I look weird, but get off my fucking tits, man. So I don't put that
Why
shit
do you
out
have
there.
Tits? Was that part of the melting process? Shape.
When they put me in the fucking toaster oven to melt my Ashton Kutcher mold, they drooped a little bit. I am very cautious about that. And, you know, I mean, like, nobody's fucking, no paparazzi ever takes a picture of me. And if they, I mean, I literally in London, when we were out there filming an episode one time, I saw Lady Gaga was staying at the same hotel that we were in while we were shooting there. And there was like, there were at least 100 paparazzi outside of our door every single day. And I was standing there one time because Lady Gaga was about to come out and I wanted to see the craziness. And I saw this one guy, like look at me, lean over to his buddy, like elbow him, and be kind of, and it was clear he was being like, oh, hey, is that guy from that fucking show that's on in the States that Armando does? And his buddy looked up and he looked at me and then he looked back at his buddy and nodded his head like, yes, that is him. And then neither of them did anything.
Oh, that's great. it's great because as melted Aaron Paul. It's not, you know, I mean, the paparazzi thing is it's way more of a curse than it is a I mean, I know, you know, for a certain stratum of the entertainment business, like, oh, well, if you're in those magazines, mm-hmm. then that helps you maintain the certain level that you can operate at, so you can fill stadiums, so you can keep getting your message out, so you can keep doing, like, it's that the. But, you know, we produced this Marvel movie marathon at the El Capitan for the last couple days, and it's right next to where Jimmy Kimmel shoots. And I came out of the backstage from the El Cap to go to dinner, and there was a ton of paparazzi out there that I guess were waiting for Courtney Cox to come out mm-hmm. of the backstage door. And they looked at me, and they didn't really, you know, it was like they had no interest whatsoever. And I honestly, I felt really good about that because it fucking sucks to feel like you at all times have to be like, look, you're on camera. It's these people. Just like just being nipped at, you know, just like just nipped at. Like,
can you imagine having to like, I still don't like, I still will fucking just be like, oh, fuck, I got to go to the store and it's early. I'm just putting on shorts and I'm wearing like leather slippers and basketball shorts. I look a fucking nightmare. Can you imagine never being able to do that? Never being able to just be like, I'm just fucking wearing some bullshit.
Without ending up in
bananas.
A bunch of tablets.
Without
like,
putting like the fucking meltdown.
Shorts fail.
Shorts
fail.
Yeah,
meltdown from melted. No. You have to embrace that.
You have to, man. I just did an interview with we're doing like a lot of press for the show and everything, and I did an interview with the AV Club, and they asked me which celebrities I get compared to most, and I think one of the only ones I came up with a couple that were like that were I felt like a little bit too flattering. And I was like, yeah, I've heard him, but this feels weird that I would say it. So like, there was like, well, Sam the Eagle from the Muppets. Like, I get that one too. Like, that's for real. So yeah.
I mean, you know, it's like, a lot of people are like Brad Pitt, but I don't see it.
I don't see it.
A lot of people, are
he's
like,
he's got way less soul in his eyes than I do.
Yeah, a lot of people are like Ewan McGregor, and I'm like, oh, what? All right. I mean, I guess
I'll take
know.
It.
I mean, I don't see it, but a lot of people are like, it's the sort of that I don't know what kind of. I mean, it's not really humble. I guess it's maybe it's humble bragging.
It's like a little humble braggy. That's why I was like, God damn! Like, just always go with the unflattering one. I like that we've created like a little melted celebrity lookalike contest.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, if one good thing that could happen in the comment threads of this podcast is people giving us more melted celebrity lookalikes.
Like, which melted celebrity which are you? Yeah. I really feel like that should be a thing going on.
All right. Great.
So thanks, Twitter troll, for that one.
Yeah. And then, but one of them, like one melted celebrity is going to be the German guy from Raiders of the Lost Ark who looked into the Ark. Oh, like God. He's a literal melted celebrity.
Have that guy on just for like that one question and then kick him out.
A lot of people say that I
look like the guy from Raiders
like
of the Lost Ark.
And I am, but I look like a...
But I have a family and a beautiful career stretching afterward.
I have a family of candles.
Like he just married a candle. Because that's we've solved a lot today, Timothy.
We've solved a lot today.
And I'm so glad that you were on. Do you want to... Veep is available now. Do you want to promote anything specifically?
Yeah, sure.
Do it.
I mean, I guess, yeah, Veep. We're on at 10:30 on Friday. Fridays. We're on at 10:30 on Sundays. You'll be watching Game of Thrones. You'll be watching Silicon Valley. Stay in the same chair.
Mm-hmm.
And then... I don't know, shit, what else can I pimp? Oh, okay, I'm in Goosebumps later on this year.
Gersperms. Yep.
I really hope they gave her a part in that movie. I think I asked around. I don't know if they did, but they should.
No, I don't know if they... I doubt it. If you go on to knowyourmeme.com, mm-hmm. there are some speculations as to who she actually is. Like, mm-hmm. some people's like, oh, someone said, oh, this is a friend of mine, and here's a picture of her now. But it's still a little unclear. And... you know, I made a video about Gersberms, and we got R.L. Stein to be in it, and
awesome.
he was skeptical at first because he thought that everyone was just making fun of some poor girl and not like, oh, yeah. She's kind of doing a character and she's being silly, and you know, and then he was like, and he was like, oh, he's a really sweet guy, but I don't think he was really on board the Gersberms train.
Oh, okay.
So I don't know if that's...
Then probably not.
Yeah, I don't know if that's going to be in
there. But that looks like it's going to be really fun. Like, I saw, like, a couple clips, and it looks like it's going to be really fucking
and
fun.
And you were also great on that Melted 70s show. And
oh, my God,
and
yeah. And I just got melted married to... and we have a melted child now.
There's almost no...
You know, a lot of great stuff is going on in my life right now, guys, in my melted life.
There's almost no context where you can say melt a child and have it be an okay thing. Well, that's the end. Enjoy your melted burrito, everyone.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.